Hey there, Weber podcast listeners. I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter so you only have the good stuff. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy. My next guest is Kekla Magoon, an award-winning author in Montpelier who writes about many of those same themes. Her books are geared towards middle grade and young adults. She's an alum and faculty member of Vermont College of Fine Arts. Her latest book, The Minus One Club, was published this week. It tells the story of a teenager named Kermit Sanders who lost his older sister in a car crash. Then he gets an invitation to a club for kids who are grieving. Also in the club, Kermit's crush, Matt. It's a story of grief, healing, and community. She will discuss the book at an event tonight at the Norwich Bookstore. Kekla Magoon, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here with you.
So I'd like to start with the inspiration for The Minus One Club. Where'd you get the idea from?
So this is an idea that's been with me for a while, and the idea really came from the title in this case, The Minus One Club. So it's about this group of teenagers who have all lost somebody close in their family, a parent, or in one case, a grandparent who was like a parent, and in some cases, siblings. And so they meet secretly at their school. So in the beginning of the novel, 15-year-old Kermit Sanders has lost his sister in a car accident, and he shows up at school and he finds this note card in his locker that says, "Be in the art room after school." And he doesn't know why, and he shows up, and it's this group of kids who's like, "We get what you're going through. Nobody else really gets it. Everybody's experience is individual, but we meet and we don't ever talk about it. We don't ever talk about what happened, but we're together and we know that this thing is happening for all of us." And so that concept really drove the novel. I thought it would be a neat idea to explore, like, what if there was this secret club of people who did understand what you were going through when you were in high school that you could meet with after school? Because that was something that I never quite felt like I had. There was always something going on in my mind or in my heart or in, you know, my day that I couldn't share with anyone. And so that it was sort of a fantasy, right, to have these friends that understood and just automatically got you.
So this book is a lot about who you wanted to be or the experiences that you wanted to happen. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, the book deals with a lot of different issues. So it's primarily a novel about grief. So Kermit has lost his sister. He's grieving his sister. He's in denial about a variety of things, including his own grief and the depth of his grief. And so part of what the club does is they say, okay, we push it away. We don't talk about it. We come to this space and we, we have fun. We just sit around and play cards. We go bowling. We do silly things. And we never talk about what's really going on. And so while there's a healthy sort of space for that, like that sense of just doing fun things in light of all the heavy stuff in your life, there's also a need for processing. And so, you know, it becomes a story about how do we actually be there for each other? How do we actually process the difficult things in our life? So Kermit is struggling with his sexuality. He lives in a really conservative community. He's gay, but he hasn't come out because he's scared of what his parents, who are very religious, and his friends and other people in the community will think of him because he's this model kid.
Your main character, Kermit, finds himself in the Minus One Club with a boy he secretly has a crush on, Matt. And Matt is the only out gay student in the school. Why did you want to center this story and this narrative, one that already is complicated by topics like grief and loss?
Absolutely. For me, one of the interesting pieces to explore is that sense of secret crush, that sense of secret relationship. As Kermit gets to know Matt, they start to build a friendship and then maybe a little bit more than a friendship. But Kermit is nervous about that because of his upbringing, right? He's been raised in the Christian church and one that specifically preaches against homosexuality. And so it's a big struggle for him to have these physical feelings and to have this desire and to feel this closeness to this other boy. And so while he's leaning into that on one hand, he's also really grappling with it internally. And that struggle feels very authentic to me. I have lived for a long time now in more progressive communities. I lived in New York for a long time. I live in Vermont now, but it was something that was a very big part of my upbringing as a kid, not from my specific faith, but from the community that I grew up in Indiana. There was just a general sense that, well, we don't talk about this. People don't come out. A lot of my friends in high school, you know, that sat at my lunch table, we've learned much later, are gay. And so it was something that was always present, but we never talked about it. And so the idea that somebody could talk about that and explore that in a private one-on-one space was interesting to me. And I wanted to play with that, you know, sort of first crush, first romance, first love, because we never sort of find love in a vacuum, I don't think. We never find relationships in a vacuum. Things are hitting us all the time, right? Grief is happening, and yet you might meet somebody that's interesting. And so how do you deal with both of those things? That extreme high of being excited about this other person and the extreme low of having lost the person who previously was closest to you, right? So that kind of pendulum swing of emotions is something that people would really experience. And so for me, looking at that range of human emotion all happening at once felt rich and interesting and complicated.
It also just seems real, right? I mean, we're never all experiencing all one motion all the time. You know, we might be doing great at work, but our love life is a mess, or vice versa, or, you know, yeah. So it just seems very real. And part of that realness is, in spite of the emotional heaviness, there are moments of humor in the book, too. How important was it to find humor in hard times?
It was very important to me. I mean, I think the best drama has some lightness and humor woven in, and the best comedy is also underneath about things that are more serious. And so I like to see how those two extremes, the comic and the tragic, kind of play off of each other and even strengthen each other. There are scenes where, you know, both Kermit and Matt are grieving and they're, you know, talking about it and not talking about it in turns, and they find ways to make light of their situation. Even Kermit's discomfort with his own identity and his own attraction to this other boy, like, they find a way to sort of make that a game that's private between the two of them when they're out in public. You know, there's a few scenes, I think, where, you know, the reader's laughing and the characters are laughing internally, but, like, there's also all the stress of, you know, the gaze of the world upon them.
Now, healing is a major part of getting over loss. What are you hoping readers will take away from the Minus One Club when it comes to Kermit's path to healing?
I'm hoping that readers will recognize both the difficult emotions that he's going through, and the necessity of finding connection and the possibility of finding connection in spite of that heaviness. I think, you know, when you're grieving, I think when you're struggling to come out, when you're trying to figure out who you are in the world, a feeling of isolation, a feeling that you're the only person in the world who's ever felt this way and the only person who could ever feel this way, nobody will ever understand you. Like, that's a very common feeling in teens in general, but it's exacerbated by grief. It's exacerbated by a struggle with identity. And so it could be, I believe, a beacon for young people who are experiencing stress and trauma and grief and other challenges, depression or grief or a struggle with their sexuality or their identity. Like, all of those things that people are going through, I hope that they will recognize themselves in this and see that there is a path to healing, and that part of that path is reaching out to people who care about you, even when that is scary.
And then I was hoping that you could read a sample from your book. And before you do, if you would offer some context and what we should know about the story leading into this part of the book that you chose to read for us.
All right. So I have two very short clips to read. The first is titled After First Period. And I will say that the book is written in vignettes, so most of the sections are very short. I'm reading excerpts from two short sections that are very early in the book. And this is the first day that Kermit is back at school. And his sister has died. He's been out of school for about a week dealing with the funeral and the various things that come along with it. And he's finally back at school, his first day. He's just trying to get through the day. And he comes to his locker and he finds something unusual. So this is after first period. The narrow sliver of scotch tape happens to be exactly at my eye level. It pokes out through my locker vent. Inside, there's a blur of white. Someone has stuck something in there. For no good reason, my fingers start to shake. I get my locker combo wrong and have to do it again. It's a small white card with a neatly typed message. You don't know us, but we know you. Sorry about your sister. As much as it sucks, we can help you. Art Room, today, 2:45. Be there. Or don't. Whatever. I flip the card over. The back is white, except for a small notation in the top left corner. -1. So that's when Kermit finds the note inviting him to the -1 club. And of course, at that point, he doesn't know what this is. It's just this cryptic message. And so he gets to the art room after school. He walks in and he finds that there's a room full of people. There's 5 other kids in there. They all come from different walks of life within the sort of the high school hierarchy, right? You've got a kid who's on the football team. You've got the captain of the spirit dance team. You've got a newspaper journalist. You've got an art kid, right? A breakfast club of sorts, right? a cross section of the student body. He doesn't know any of them very well. He kind of recognizes them, knows their names, but he's never really talked to any of them. So he gets in there and they're all sitting there completely silent around the art room table with a stack of note cards in the middle of the table, and they're looking at him and they've said nothing. And so he's standing there silently looking at them. They're sitting there silently looking at him. And then this is the next excerpt. The door blasts open, bringing a fresh wave of outside noise from the hallway. I'm so sorry, guys. So sorry. I got held up after class. I mean, geez, once Mrs. Markey gets on a roll, there's just no stopping her. My throat clogs instantly at the sound of his voice. Oh God, oh God. It chokes me like a prayer, although I stopped believing in God 6.5 days ago. Matthew Rincorn tosses his gorgeous sculpted self into the empty seat next to me. He touches my shoulder, actually touches me. I get goosebumps all over. Hi, Kermit, he says. Welcome to the -1 club. So that's when he realizes like that, you know, his crush is in the group, and then they sit down and explain to him that they've all lost someone. And so the index cards sitting on the table are a little note that they've each written, you know, my mother died of pancreatic cancer, my father died in a sailing accident, my sister died of leukemia, et cetera. And they've each like written the note about what happened to their family and signed it, and they keep it in this little box. And then also inside the box is like a deck of cards. And so they literally sit down. He writes out his card, adds it to the box. He takes the vow that he will not tell anyone else about the -1 club. And then they just sit down and play poker for an hour and never talk about what happened. And it's just, for him, it's this breath of fresh air, because everyone else in his life is trying to be like, I'm so sorry. Like, oh my gosh, like, what can I do? Like, how can I help? Do you want to talk about it? Like, you know, and he's just like, I just can't think about it. I can't think about it yet. I can't process it, but I just like want to be with people who understand. And so that's the premise of the story.
Now, the -1 club could be a very helpful book for those struggling to connect with others after a loss. What role does writing play for you as a way to process the feelings like grief, depression, and confronting feelings and processing?
It's definitely a big thing for me, and something I think can be helpful for a lot of people. You know, like, I think of writing as two entirely separate things. The idea of publishing a piece is a very specific, far along the process act that I make deliberately, whereas writing, just expressing myself on the page, is something that's completely mine. It's completely private. I, you know, threw scenes for the -1 club at the page for probably 2 or 3 years before I decided it was actually going to become a novel that I wanted to share with the world. And part of that is a way of processing my own feelings, my own emotions, my own struggles, the times that I'm feeling not great, right? I find a way to put that into a character and put that into a story. Having that little bit of remove for me sometimes is helpful. I know some people are good at journaling and like writing down, you know, today I did this and I felt this way and I thought this. And I've never been great at journaling in that direct, today this is what happened way. I tend to process my emotions through fiction because it just gives you that little bit of distance. I can say, well, this character is feeling really angry. So I might be feeling angry in my own life, and I come to the page angry and I want to write an angry scene, right? So I might write a scene that's later in the book or a scene that's not the next scene because of how I'm feeling. So I use my own emotions to drive what I'm writing and to process what I'm writing. But for me, doing that through the lens of fiction is really helpful. And I think it can be true on the reader side too, to not have to talk directly about feeling depressed, to not have to talk directly about grief, to not have to talk directly about what you've lost, but to be able to talk about those emotions through the lens of the character. Wow, I really think in this scene, Kermit and Matt are feeling this, right? And having those conversations in a classroom or in a community or with a family is a way of talking about your own emotions and expressing yourself while having that little bit of distance, that little bit of protection that I think is helpful for that processing.
Now, my last question is, you've tackled some really compelling and potentially difficult topics in your young adult fiction, from a novel about the formative years of Malcolm X, to a story about Black teenagers shot by a white gunman, to a group of teenagers taking part in civil disobedience movement in the 1960s Chicago. Now, this novel deals with many difficult emotions. Why do you think it's important to center these themes and ideas in young adult fiction?
I definitely always am writing about challenging topics. I write a lot about social justice in a historical and contemporary context. I write a lot about identity, not just figuring out who you are, but also figuring out how you can use your voice to be someone who makes change in the world, someone who is a positive force in the world, be that activism, right? Be that writing, be that other forms of expression, just figuring out who you are and how to serve, whatever that means to you. And for me, it's most important to write about that for teens, because that's when you're forming your identity. That's when you're figuring out who you are. That's when you have energy and when you have a lot of power that our society often tries to teach teens that they don't have. When I was growing up, I learned a lot about the civil rights movement, but I learned it by hearing about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I learned about Rosa Parks. I barely learned about Malcolm X. I thought it was this movement of grown people, adult people in their 30s, you know, or 40s or 50s, right? Marching for peace, you know, this very staid, a respectable movement, right? Where people linked arms and sang, "We shall overcome," and went to Washington. Like, that was the impression that I had. But the reality of the civil rights movement is that it was teenagers. It was high school students and college students, young 20s. It was even children in elementary school and middle school who were marching, who were protesting, who were arrested, who were beaten, who put their lives on the line for this movement. Like, it was young people, the vast majority of the civil rights activists who protested and marched and made this change were under the age of 20, certainly under the age of 25. And so that is something that was missing from my understanding of history, that sense that I, as a young person, could do things right now. You know, they're always like, "Oh, well, what do you want to be when you grow up?" Or, "Oh, you know, who do you think you'll become?" You know, and it's like, no, but who are you now? Like, what are you going to do now? And so as we see protest movements unfolding around the country, we know that young people are the engines for social change always. It's historically always been the case, and yet we don't teach it that way and we don't talk about it that way. And so part of my work is to try to bring awareness to young people of their own power, and that their own, all the struggles and all of the challenges that they have come along with a vision for what the world could be, and the power to actually enact some of those things if they step up and say, this is what we want and this is who we are. And so I hope to encourage them to use their voices for positive change across society.
That was Kekla Magoon, author of the new young adult book, The Minus One Club, out this week. You can catch her tonight at 7 p.m. at the Norwich Bookstore. Kekla, thanks so much for being on Vermont Edition.
Thank you.